I invite you to join me in Genesis 35:21, where we dropped off our study yesterday. We're looking at the journey of Jacob from Shechem, where he'd been living for apparently about 10 years, to eventually his father's place at Hebron. Now, he had to leave there because his two boys, Simeon and Levi, had killed all the men of Shechem as a means of revenge over their sister having slept without benefit of marriage with the prince of that city. It was a mess, and there seems to have been some idolatry involved in it as well, because Jacob forces everybody to give up their idols, and he buries them under the tree, which was probably by the altar at Shechem, and then they head south. Thankfully for him, God protects the entire entourage from reprisals of the citizens of nearby cities that might have been allied with Shechem. That's God's intervention to keep the promise from being stopped from happening. And so on the way of this very rapid trip, Rachel gives birth to the second of her two sons with Jacob, but it is a hard labor and she dies. She, in her last breath, said that he was the son of her sorrow, or Ben-Oni. But Jacob cannot allow that name to stand, so he gives him the name Ben-Yamin, which means son of the right hand, or favored son. So Rachel is buried just north a few miles of Jerusalem, on the road between Bethel and Ephrat, which is Bethlehem. Probably at the what will later become the city of Ramah. And then he continues his journey after an appropriate time of mourning. And that's what verse 21 is about. Says Israel journeyed on and pitched his tent beyond the Tower of Eder. Nobody knows where this Tower of Eder is now. It seems to be somewhere immediately south of Bethlehem. That seems to be the best guess. So it was probably the natural place to stop after leaving the tomb of Rachel, but not yet wanting to arrive with all of his stock, all of his animals, at his father's place in Hebron. I'm guessing that this place is probably about 15 or so miles north of Hebron, therefore, like I said, immediately south of Bethlehem, and that Jacob may have had in mind, this is close enough for me not to crowd my father's flocks and herds, and yet still have plenty of places for me to run my flocks and herds. Now, something happens while he's living in this specific site, and I don't think he lives there very long, so maybe a few days, maybe a couple of weeks, but something else happens, a tragedy, that leads to him going farther south, going all the way to his father's place. So verse 22 says, while Israel lived in that land, and that's where I get the impression that he was here in this site near the Tower of Eder for a little while. While Israel lived in that land, Reuben went and lay with Bilhah, his father's concubine, and Israel heard of it. So Reuben is the eldest son. He's somewhere right around 24 years of age at this point. Bilhah is the concubine of Jacob because she was the servant of Rachel, and Rachel designated her as the surrogate mom for several of Rachel and Jacob's sons. That means that Rachel and Bilhah would have been pretty close. They may have known each other well before Rachel's father designated her as the maid companion of Rachel whenever she got married to Jacob. And that's been about almost 30 years ago now, based on the chronology I'm working on. So it is exceptionally likely that Bilhah is torn up emotionally at this moment by the loss of Rachel. And it is my opinion that that's likely to be the reason for this sexual encounter that takes place. There are many commentators that say that Reuben was making a power play against his father with this action, and I just can't see that being the case. I understand their reasoning. They think ahead about other places in the Old Testament where usurpers to thrones show their taking over of the kingdom after they've either killed the king or chased him out of the territory. They show that they're taking over everything by sleeping with the wives and the concubines of the former king. I do not see that being the parallel here. Reuben is not trying to kill off his father. He's not trying to chase him out of the country. He's not trying to assert his right as the heir because he is the eldest. So he certainly has the assumption of being the heir of the promise. I just believe we've got a 24-year-old who tries to comfort the friend of Rachel, almost an aunt figure, probably for Reuben. And one thing leads to another in the midst of that comfort, and they have a sexual encounter. That's my take on it. Doesn't ultimately matter how it happened. It did happen. And Jacob found out about it. Israel heard about it. And this causes him to revoke the right of the blessing of the firstborn and of the birthright, the blessing of the Abrahamic promises from Reuben. He will not be receiving that now. The next two sons, Simeon and Levi, they've also recently disgraced their father. They're the reason that he had to make this really fast trip that might have brought on the premature labor of his beloved Rachel. They did it by killing all the men in Shechem because they felt that their sister had been mistreated by Shechem, who had not married her before having sex with her. So he'd already had a bad attitude toward them. So neither one of them is going to receive what has just been taken from Reuben. And so that leaves son number four, Judah, as the one that will receive the right to be the heir, the right to have the firstborn blessing and the blessing of the promise made to Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and now Judah. And so these are the reasons why the Messiah comes from the Judah tribe, even though Judah is the third-born son of Jacob. Next, we have a list of the children. and it's arranged based on the women who gave birth. So it says, now the sons of Jacob were 12, the sons of Leah, and she, of course, is senior wife because she was married first. Reuben, which would be Jacob's firstborn, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, and Zebulun. So six sons from Leah's own body. And then you have the beloved wife of Jacob. The sons of Rachel would be Joseph and Benjamin. Joseph is right around 16 or 17 right now, and Benjamin is a baby. And so that gives you a sense as to the distance of age between the two of them. Then we go to Bilhah, the sons of Bilhah. Bilhah is Rachel's servant, as I just talked about, and she has two sons from her body, both of which would have been provided as a surrogacy for Rachel. So these sons are physically Bilhah's, but legally Rachel's, and that would be Dan and Naphtali. And then finally, the sons of Zilpah, Leah's maid, Gad and Asher. So there's four sons from the surrogacies. Rachel has two, and Leah has six. And these are the sons of Jacob who were born to him in Padan Aram, with the exception, of course, Benjamin, who was just born in Canaan itself. Verse 27, and Jacob came to his father Yitzhak at Mamre, or Kiriath Arba. That's the name that Moses knows it by, the name which the Israelis know it by. That is Hebron. That's the name it will be known by in the future Israeli stories, where Abraham and Yitzhak had sojourned. So this is where we find out Jacob leaves the area of the Tower of Eder, moves all the way in with his father and his mother, and that might be the reason why he starts running his sheep far to the north, because he does not want his animals to overcrowd, overfeed on the pasture lands of his father. And his father, by the way, is blind, we know that, but he's been blind for a good long time, but he has lots of servants that would be taking care of his animals. And he's still got a few more years in him. He is going to live to 180 years, and that's what comes up into the next verse in our text. But I don't want to get into his death yet, because we have other stories that take place in the chronology first. And so I would ask you to go ahead and go down to chapter 37 at this point. We'll come back to that material later, when it actually is the chronological timing of Yitzhak's death, all right? So Genesis 37 now. Jacob lived in the land of his father's sojourning in the land of Canaan. We know that. These are the generations of Jacob. And that's one of our Toledoth passages, and so it's one of the dividers in the book of Genesis. Then we have the very famous story of Joseph. Joseph, being 17 years old, and that's where I've been getting that number from, was pasturing the flock with his brothers. He was a boy with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, his father's wives. So these would be the four sons of the two concubines. So Joseph is hanging with them, and they're all working together to take care of the sheep. And apparently, the four sons of the two concubines are not doing a good job. They are in their late teens, early 20s, and maybe they're just being lazy. Or maybe they're killing some of the animals and having a big old cookout when they haven't asked father for permission. Or maybe they're selling some of the animals off. We could come up with all sorts of reasons why the next line would be true. Joseph brought a bad report of them to their father. Now, a lot of people have a visceral reaction to this. They say, Joseph was a tattletale. I don't take that tact. I think that Joseph probably told them what they were doing was incorrect, that they needed to fix what they were doing, and if they didn't, he would report them. They didn't, so he did. He was responsible to his father for taking care of these sheep. And if his fellow workers were not doing well, he is responsible for passing that information on to his father. So I believe he did the right thing. But it didn't win him any favor points with them. Then we've got the problem with Jacob's attitude toward Joseph. Verse 3, Now Israel loved Joseph more than any other of his sons because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a robe of many colors. Now Benjamin is also beloved in this fashion, but Benjamin's just a baby. Joseph is, he's an older teen. He is approaching full adulthood, which in that culture was somewhere around 20 and between 20 and 25, depending on what activities we're talking about. And so Israel, even though he, as a younger man, had suffered under the favoritism of his father toward the other brother, Esau, Jacob goes ahead and engages in the same behavior. He shows favoritism. And he gives Joseph a very distinctive piece of clothing. Now, there's debates as to exactly what this clothing looked like. The Hebrew text seems to use a word that means a very long robe with long sleeves on it. But by the time you get to the Septuagint translation, 3 centuries before Jesus, the writers, the translators of that text, added in the sense of multicolors. And so that's the one that traditionally we hear about, the multicolored robe that he has. Don't get too caught up into what it might have looked like. Understand this, it was exceptionally distinctive. Only Joseph among the sons had a robe like this. You would have been able to see it from a distance, that it was different than everybody else's. And the fact that it was given to him by his father was a blatant showing of favoritism that the other brothers didn't like one bit. Verse 4, but when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peacefully to him. So he didn't get along with any of his other brothers. They're all within 7 years of him, age-wise, but he doesn't get along with any of them. As much as he might want to, they aren't having it. And then something else happens that further alienates him from his brothers, and that is God gifts him with a gift of prophetic knowledge, the ability to dream and understand dreams. Verse 5, now Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more. He said to them, hear this dream that I've dreamed. Behold, we were binding sheaves in the field. And behold, my sheaf arose and stood upright, and behold, your sheaves gathered around it and bowed down to my sheaf. So this would be another activity that Israel's whole tent encampment would be involved in, and that is they planted certain areas near their encampment and harvested the grain, and so part of that process would be going out and hand-cutting the grain stalks and binding them in little bundles, probably not huge, maybe, you know, a couple of hand breadths around. And so in his dream, he saw their 11 sheaves, because probably Benjamin was also represented in the dream, bowing before his sheaf. And you don't have to be a prophet to understand the significance of this. And his brothers clue in real quick. His brother said to him, "Are you indeed to reign over us? Or are you indeed to rule over us?" And so they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. And then he dreamed another dream, and he told it to his brothers and said, "Behold, I've dreamed another dream. Behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars were bowing down to me." Now he's being honest. Some people might think he's a bit naive. I think that he is open in his sharing of what God is giving to him. I believe he understands this is coming to him from God. He is a prophet, and he is feeling that these are different than other dreams he's had in his life before this. And so he feels the need to share it. But again, it doesn't win him any popularity contest with his brothers, nor with his father, apparently, at this point, because his father rebukes him over it. When he told it to his father and to his brothers, his father rebuked him and said to him, "What is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall I and your mother and your brothers indeed come to bow ourselves to the ground before you?" So he understands that the son in this dream represents him. The moon represents Leah, not Rachel, because she's passed on. And Leah is the senior wife and therefore is the legitimate mother to Joseph right now. So Jacob doesn't see himself or Leah bowing before their son. It always goes the other way around in this culture. As for the brothers bowing before them, before him, he is the youngest. He is not Judah. He is not going to be the one that receives the firstborn blessing or the blessing of the promise. So he gets kind of called on the carpet about this. Verse 11, his brothers were jealous of him. They're very upset. But his father kept the saying in mind. He knows this is something different. This is something special. And so even though he tells Joseph, "You shouldn't be talking about things like that. That doesn't sound like something appropriate," in the back of his mind, I think he understands there's something special about Joseph. Now, he has a special relationship with him, but the dreams seem to indicate that God's got a special relationship with him. Now, let's set the story up for tomorrow. Verse number 12. Now, his brothers went to pasture their father's flock near Shechem. Now, that's back where they came from, probably several months earlier. It's 50-some miles away by the road, and a couple of days' travel, if you will. They probably don't need to be afraid of the populace of Shechem. Shechem is probably being repopulated by others from the region. And those others have already been warned by God in some form or fashion. You don't do anything negative to Jacob and his family or his servants. So why are they running their flocks this far north? Because it's good grazing territory. And so the sons have taken them up there, and they're working on them. And then Joseph has stayed home. His father has kept him home, but now needs him to be a runner, to go and check on some stuff. Verse 13, Israel said to Joseph, "Are not your brothers pasturing the flock at Shechem? Come, I will send you to them." And he said to him, "Here I am." And so he said to him, "Go now, see if it is well with your brothers and with the flock, and bring me word." So he is not going there to work with them. He's going there to evaluate their work, to make sure everything's happening proper. And of course, Joseph has already functioned in this way before, where he reported back to his dad that at least four of his brothers weren't acting properly with the herds. All right, so he sent him from the valley of Hebron, and he came to Shechem. And that's where we know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that Jacob is living at Hebron, but he is grazing his animals as much as 50 miles north of where his father's territory is. And so it would have taken him a couple of days to get there. And verse 15, a man found him wandering in the field. So he's wandering around the territory looking for his brothers. And the man asked, "What are you seeking?" He says, "I'm seeking my brothers." And he said, "Tell me, please, where are they pasturing the flock?" And the man said, "Oh, they've gone away, for I heard them say, 'Let's go to Dothan.'" So Dothan is another 15 or so road miles to the north. And so Joseph is going to probably spend the night at Shechem, and tomorrow morning he'll get up and go even farther north to find his brothers.